This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, America. It is Monday, August 15, in the year of our Lord, 2016. I'm Ken Klukowski, guest hosting here for Washington Watch. Ken Klukowski standing in today for our great friend and the usual host of this show, Tony Perkins. I am senior counsel and director of strategic affairs at the First Liberty Institute, the largest law firm in the United States, exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty. Check out what we're doing fighting for you and your rights there at firstliberty.org. Also, the senior legal editor for Breitbart News Network, exposing the truth about the liberal left and telling you the real news that the establishment media is trying to bury. Find out what's really going on in your country and your world at Breitbart.com. But I'm speaking to you today not for First Liberty or for Breitbart, but rather as a Christian husband, father, and citizen blessed to live in the greatest nation in the history of this world, these United States of America. We're talking about faith, family, and freedom this hour, and we want you to join us. After we speak with our guest here in a moment, we're going to be opening up the phone lines and would like you to weigh in at 866-372-7234, because ultimately this is what this show is about. It's about you, the American people, about your faith, your family, and your freedoms, and this is your chance to tell our leaders in Washington what you want them to hear. So make sure that you sound off and let them know at 866-372-7234. We're going to be hitting some hardcore political stuff today, so I do want to start off by mentioning that American Family Radio does not endorse any candidates for president or for federal office. Neither do the various networks and affiliates carrying this show. Any political viewpoints expressed are that of your humble host or the guests on this show. But you're going to be hearing those opinions today, and we're going to be starting off with our first guest, a wonderful friend to freedom here in the United States. Chris Kobach is the Secretary of State for the great state of Kansas, really an incredible patriot, a graduate of Harvard and Yale Law School, clerked for a federal appeals judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit, was counselor to the Attorney General under the great John Ashcroft in the U.S. Department of Justice, returned back home to his home state where he was leader of the Republican Party and a law professor there in his home area, and has now gone on to be chosen by the citizens of his state to be his Secretary of State. He is also, I will add, someone that many conservative leaders nationwide would love to see tapped to serve in a Trump administration. If Donald Trump should succeed to the presidency, he could have no one better, many would say, than Chris Kobach leading the U.S. Justice Department as Attorney General. But right now, his job as Kansas Secretary of State is the chief elections officer of that state, where Secretary Kobach has been a national leader fighting for voter ID measures, proof of citizenship measures, and other measures to safeguard the ballot box to make sure that democracy and the will of the people properly counted and tabulated is what prevails on Election Day. And so we are thrilled to have him. Mr. Secretary, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Ken. Great to be on the show.
I would be fascinated, Mr. Secretary, to get your take on a couple things. I'm going to ask you just a bit about Donald Trump's foreign policy speech, where he also mentioned a few points on immigration, which I know is a matter that you are intimately familiar with. But I want to focus most of our time today on I was in Denver. I'm telling our listeners, I was in Denver a couple days late last week, where I saw Secretary Kobach speaking regarding election law. And he went in great detail regarding voter ID measures and proof of citizenship. I thought it was fascinating what he was laying out, and I knew that it would be material that all of you want to make sure that you're familiar with as well. Mr. Secretary, let me ask you to start with, because there's some people who aren't very familiar with this issue. Why are laws that would require photo ID to register to vote or vote on Election Day, why are such measures and proof of citizenship important for elections here in the United States?
Well, I think as many of your listeners intuitively know, these laws are really important to ensure that we have fair elections. You know, at the end of the day, we are fighting for our values in an election arena, and we need to know that if we win, that those that the win will be shown at the ballot box, and that, you know, the results are fair. And we see the consequences when there is voter fraud. And, you know, to give an example that everyone will have a recent memory of, and that's the Obamacare vote. It passed by one vote in the U.S. Senate, and one of the senators who cast a vote for Obamacare was none other than Minnesota Senator Al Franken. And it has since been revealed that in that very close vote, when Franken was elected to the U.S. Senate over Norm Coleman, the number of felons who were illegally allowed to vote in that election far exceeded the very narrow margin of victory, which is 200 and some votes. And, you know, if that seat was won by fraud, which it appears it was, then we are all paying the price for it. And the same thing can be repeated again. If a member of Congress or a governor or any person able to make a decision that affects our lives wins the office by fraud, whether he intentionally wants fraudulent votes to be cast in his favor or his agents do, or it just works out that way. The bottom line is, you know, our republic requires that elections are be fair and that people who are not qualified do not vote. So anyway, there's been a movement. Initially, the movement was for photo ID laws, and Kansas is one of the 16 states that has some form of photo ID. There are about 11 states that are strict photo ID, which is what we have, without exceptions. And then there are five that have various workarounds like affidavits. But those, we have those states. Those are mostly red states, although there are states like Rhode Island that are not red states among them. But we also have the next step, which is if a state really wants to secure its election, it's proof of citizenship when you register. And Kansas, Arizona, Georgia, and Alabama are the four states that have gone out and taken this next step.
And why is that an important next step, Mr. Secretary?
It is so important because we live in a country right now that is approaching a historic record of the number of non-citizens living in the United States. We haven't had this high a percentage of non-citizens living in the United States since the great wave at the beginning of the 20th century of immigration. And we have a confluence of that great wave, another wave of immigration of non-citizens, along with the fact that we have the motor voter law, which results in a lot of non-citizens accidentally getting registered at the DMV because they're asked by the nice lady behind the desk, hey, would you like to register to vote? Because that nice lady has asked, you know, 500 people the same question that day. And even though they're not citizens and not entitled to vote, they end up getting registered, and then they get letters in the mail from candidates because they're on the registered voters list, and then they vote. And it's a problem that's been documented all over the country. And like I say, those four states, we've taken the lead and said, okay, the only way to stop this problem is at the front end, requiring proof of citizenship when you register. Well, the Obama administration has pulled out all the stops to try to stop states like Kansas, Arizona, Alabama, and Georgia. And so we're right now engaged in four separate lawsuits, three of them against the ACLU, one of them against the Obama Justice Department. And they know that if they take down Kansas...
Is there any difference between those two, the Obama DOJ and the ACLU? Is that different storefronts coming out of the same building?
You know, increasingly the Obama Justice Department looks like a branch office of the ACLU. And that's been well documented by some of the writers on Pajamas Media, like Christian Adams and others, who pointed out that the Obama Justice Department has been hiring ACLU attorneys into career positions for years now. But, you know, be that as it may, the once great U.S. Department of Justice is now a very left-leaning partisan outfit that is trying to attack states like Kansas for adopting proof of citizenship. And their plan is pretty clear. They want to stop Kansas and then effectively stop other states, including the other three that I just mentioned, from enforcing our proof of citizenship law and stop the rest of the country from following our lead. And it's so important that we do. I mean, we are talking about thousands of non-citizens in just about every state who are already on the voter rolls, and thousands more who will get on the voter rolls unless proof of citizenship is adopted. So it's a big deal.
And we're talking with Secretary of State Chris Kobach here from Kansas. Mr. Secretary, over the weekend, I published a speech after I heard a piece on Breitbart News after I saw your presentation talking about your SAFE Act as what you see as model legislation that the various sovereign states can adopt in order to implement these safeguards. What can you tell us about the SAFE Act?
So that was our statute that I drafted and we passed in Kansas in 2011. And it, in one batch, it includes photo ID, proof of citizenship when you register, and equivalent security for mail-in ballots. That's one of the big loopholes in many of the 16 photo ID states, is that there isn't equivalent security for people who send in a mail-in ballot. There's no protection, no validation of identity at all. And so, you know, if a state really wants to do the best it can do, it would adopt something like the Kansas Secure and Fair Elections Act.
Now, Mr. Secretary, in the couple minutes that we have left, I'd love to tie in what you're talking about to the news of the day. Donald Trump gave a major foreign policy speech today, which is receiving rave reviews, hit on a ton of great points, and gave a speech that wasn't just very serious and presidential in its substance, but also so many people are talking about how this was truly presidential in its tone and presentation, where people could see a possible President Trump giving that presentation. You've been heavily involved on issues of immigration for years, talking now about specifically illegal immigration and illegal aliens. Donald Trump repeated today that about the kind of vetting system that he believes we need to have in place for foreign immigrants, especially those coming in from certain Muslim parts of the world where it's well documented that terrorist networks are heavily involved and trying to infiltrate the West. And he said, as part of it, that that while we get such a system up, that he would consider on a strictly temporary basis a ban on Muslims immigrating from countries where we know there is out-of-control terrorist movements and infiltration. The left is screaming back that that is, among other things, unconstitutional. I'm not going to bring up today whether it's good policy or bad policy. What is your reaction to whether or not the U.S. Constitution would permit a president working with Congress to adopt such a temporary measure while we're overhauling our overall immigration system?
Well, you know, I think it was a very important message that he delivered. And, you know, I want to point out something that many people, that is, we've done this before, and we did it effectively right after 9/11, and I was part of it at the Ashcroft Justice Department. Right after 9/11, we put in special screening measures for people from countries associated with Al-Qaeda. It can be done, and it should be done.
We've been talking with Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach. It's been talking about issues regarding on voter security, the integrity of the ballot box, the need to make sure that your votes are not diluted by anyone else's illegal activity, and also the issue of the day, immigration, and how it relates to foreign policy. Mr. Secretary, we're so grateful that you would take the time to be with us here today. We wish you all the best. God bless, and we'll look forward to having you back soon. Folks, we're back with your calls after the break at 866-372-7234. Again, my thanks to Secretary Kobach. We're back with you right after the break.
Every day, Christian values are being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy at an alarming rate. What can ordinary Christian citizens do to make their voices heard in an arena that is set on silencing them? FRC is here to help. Every week on the FRC blog, we will publish a question of the week that people like you are asking around the country, along with our answer. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any specific value that FRC continues to stand for, whether it be life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line for the chance to be published on our blog. Again, that's frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line. Thank you for standing with us.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Delta Airlines was down and out across the globe last week due to a computer failure caused by a power outage in Atlanta. Think of the delays, cancellations, inconveniences, and other financial troubles caused by one centralized power outage. If America was attacked by an EMP, an electronic magnetic pulse, by some enemy detonating a nuclear missile high above our atmosphere, the nationwide catastrophic effect would be incalculable. We'd be left with no electric power or anything that depends on electric power. Think about it. No medical or financial services, no communications, and food reserves would quickly be depleted. We're a nation that's ill-prepared for such an event. Get informed, take this conversation to the public square, and tell Congress that we need to be more aggressive in naming and confronting our enemies, in protecting our electric grid and our defense against enemy missiles. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
With a ministry opportunity, here's Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
$22 billion of damage occurred last year in October in South Carolina due to flooding. They saw rain that they had never seen. It was a 1,000-year flood. And now you and I get a chance to go with 8 Days of Hope this October to help hundreds of families rebuild their homes. 16,000 homes suffered some type of damage. We expect thousands of volunteers to come from around the country to southeastern South Carolina in October. We're looking for roofers and plumbers and electricians, people that know how to paint and hang drywall. There's something for everybody at 8 Days of Hope. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
Help us to be the hands and feet of Jesus. Sign up for at least 3 days between October 8th and 15th. And if you're not able to go, you can still help with a financial donation at 8daysofhope.com. That's 8daysofhope.com.
And we're back, America, and taking your calls in this segment at 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Let us know what you think about what Secretary of State Kris Kobach had to share with us regarding the ballot box, regarding voter integrity measures, and also that brief touch that we got there on to Mr. Donald J. Trump's foreign policy speech today. Opening up the phones for you at 866-372-7234. And we are starting off with Celeste from Arkansas. Celeste, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I have a question, and I've not heard it addressed by many politicians. The major argument of opponents of voter ID is the fact that it discriminates against low-income, impoverished people. Being able to buy, I know at my motor vehicles it's $5. Why isn't our lawmakers enacting a national bill to put forth that we will pay for their ID? And then that could squash the argument of the opponents of voter ID. They can no longer argue that.
Good question, Celeste, and I'll answer it in three parts. First of all, I had a piece out on illegal immigration a couple days ago on Breitbart. Everyone feel free to Google Klukowski Breitbart Constitution Muslim Ban. And as you see the piece, that'll pop up right away. If you scroll down to my tagline at the bottom, it mentions one of my scholarly publications. I formerly taught law school, called The Other Voting Right, published by Yale Law and Policy Review. You'll find a link there to get into that. I would encourage everyone to read that because it talks about how voting is different from other fundamental rights, how it's both the right to cast a ballot, but also the right to have your vote fully counted, not diluted or canceled out by someone else's illegal vote. It also talks about what it means that this is the only fundamental right that's also a duty. and how the government under the Constitution can impose certain reasonable requirements for people to fulfill that duty while they're exercising their fundamental right. Celeste, to come directly in my last two parts to your question, at a national level, I think a bill like that I would oppose at a national level, because the Constitution in the Elections Clause entrust primary responsibility for running elections in the sovereign states. This is not a federal matter as such, so I would actually oppose that on 10th Amendment and federalism grounds. What I would support, which would lead to the same outcome, is measures in photo ID laws that provide that if a person cannot get a photo ID or cannot afford one, that the state will provide one for free. And guess what, Celeste? All of the voter ID laws being passed right now include a provision exactly like that. In my home state of Indiana, in Chris Kobach's state of Kansas, if you cannot afford an ID, the state will provide you. You still have to go do the form. You still have to give your proof of identification. But for anyone who cares enough to participate in democracy to do that, as is their civic duty to do, the state will give you an ID that would be free of charge. They're saying it's just somehow discriminates against low-income people that you make them go to the same effort that you require of higher income people. Celeste, that was a great call. Thanks so much. Turning now to Nelson from Texas. You're on Washington Watch.
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon. Would like to just comment and I'll hang up. I think that Donald Trump really came to a very objective and positive speech on his foreign policy. I think he should concentrate more on those issues, and I'm pretty sure his poll numbers will come up real fast. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to say that.
Thank you, Nelson. And I'll tell you, too, I think I agree with you. I thought it was a wonderful speech. I thought it was a serious presidential speech. He laid out what the problems were. It just stuns me to no end that the sitting president of the United States seems to have a hyper-allergic reaction to being able to say the words radical Islamic terrorism. You know, I think it's hard to defeat an enemy that you don't have the courage to actually identify by name. And that Donald Trump identified what the problems were, laid out some policy proposals to address them. And I think that sets him in a whole different plane than Hillary Clinton, who is just promising another 4 years of Barack Obama's foreign policy. And I have to say that foreign policy has been an absolute abysmal, miserable failure. The Mideast is a wreck. We're facing threats from every side. Obviously, what's been done over the past 8 years is not working to keep America safe. Just go talk to the families in Benghazi, for crying out loud. And if people want 4 more years of that kind of insecurity, Hillary's probably their candidate. But again, that's just my personal view. Turning now to Perry from West Virginia. Perry, you're on Washington Watch.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Doing well. What can I do for you?
Well, and then I'm driving up the road and because the weather is raining so hard. But what I called about is when you get a federal driver's license now, you have to have 5 identifications, even if you've been in that state forever in West Virginia. So I don't know why they don't only take the federal driver's license. I mean, if you don't have one of those or a federal ID, I don't think, you know, those pretty well square you away that you're an American citizen. The other thing is I can't bring to myself to vote for Hillary because of the lying in the past, plus also wanting to take our guns away. Because if we should happen to have a group of Muslims in this country that want to all of a sudden burst out in every state, the only thing we have is our guns at home. And she's for gun control and a lot of other things that don't jive with this with our society.
Well, I'll tell you, Perry, I am a former employee, not just a life member, but I used to work at the National Rifle Association of America, so I am a fierce defender of the Second Amendment, and I am certainly with you on that. Regarding driver's licenses, the Real ID Act, which was passed by Congress, requires states to now include certain elements on their state driver's licenses. Guess what? A lot of states are not doing that. Federal law asks them to, but the 10th Amendment doesn't allow them to require states to do it. You can condition federal funding on it. You can say that you can't get on an airplane unless you have stuff like that. So some states are adopting, because non-citizens can get driver's licenses. And in some states are adopting licenses that include a note as to whether you're a non-citizen. But I agree that I think all states need to do that, because otherwise you have people who are able to pass themselves off on American citizens who are actually not. Perry, thanks for calling. Folks, we're heading to break now with a special guest afterwards. That's all the time for callers right now, but we'll open up the phone lines later on in the show.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
A fair amount of economic data coming out this week. Some of it is in and around housing. We get building permits. We're going to get housing starts. We're going to get industrial production, very, very important. And CPI, Consumer Price Index, those numbers coming out early this week as well. We already got some numbers this week. The first number we got out was the Empire Manufacturing. That's a New York Fed manufacturing number. Now, this should not come as any surprise, but the vast majority of economists surveyed weren't even close. They haven't been close in about 3.5 years. Again, I said last week when we were talking roughly about some manufacturing across Philly Fed and Empire Manufacturing numbers that were due out this week, it's basically impossible for them to be any kind of decent numbers when we got that last productivity report. So we get Empire Manufacturing. They were expecting that it was going to increase 4 points. That would have been fairly significant. It was barely just above the flat line last month at 0.55. So that would have been a significant jump, 4%. We did get a 4.6%. The problem was it wasn't a jump up. It was thrown into contraction mode, negative territory, not by a little, but by 4.6%. That is significant. That's over a 5% move in manufacturing sector in the New York Fed. We get a lot of other manufacturing numbers coming out and productivity the rest of the week.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
And we're back, America. Ken Klukowski sitting in for Tony Perkins here for Washington Watch today. We're turning now to our next special guest, a great friend of this show and friend of mine. Ken Blackwell is the Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance at the Family Research Council, where he works with Tony Perkins. But that is after decades of public service as the mayor of the great city of Cincinnati. When I clerked for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, that courthouse is in Cincinnati, and I had the opportunity to get to know the Queen City very well. It's a great city, and I'm sure it's all due to Mayor Blackwell's tenure back a number of years ago. Also served as Undersecretary for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development under former President H.W. Bush, and a host of other public offices. The reason I'm mentioning the two that I did, mayor of a major city and the undersecretary at HUD, is because I was to respond to the tragic news out of Milwaukee in talking about law and order and addressing the challenge that this nation is facing. And I couldn't think of anyone better to bring in than Secretary Blackwell. Mr. Secretary, thank you for joining us. Now, I'm watching the news here, and I see Sheriff David Clark, who I think is a fantastic patriot and a fantastic lawman, as he comes out talking about the lawlessness going on in Milwaukee. From what looks like by news reports, if these initial reports are to believed, look like a justified homicide where you had a black man turning a firearm against a police officer, and that police officer, who is himself African American, drew his own weapon, and as a result, the man who menaced him with the weapon is now dead. Now, despite the fact that both of the individuals involved are black, Black Lives Matter is taking to the street saying that this is an act of racism. And stirring up all sorts of trouble in Milwaukee. And I would just love your perspective on what you think this is and what it is not.
Well, look, what it is a collapse of social order. We are in an election season when candidates are pandering and promising and telling people that the solutions to all of their problems, including reducing crime, is yet another government program, when what families need are more than more fathers and mothers together in the home, and as you and I have talked about on many of occasions, a faithful church on the corner. This is, Ken, a very interesting situation, and that is whether or not we're going to be a country that is founded on the foundation of the rule of law, or whether we will allow our cities, as a consequence of failed liberal urban policies, to become predatory centers of the antics of the wild, and that's what we are now witnessing with the paid agents of chaos. And the misguided, perhaps some are misguided, young people who, as opposed to looking at the whole notion of individual responsibility, they are playing out the hand that the Al Sharptons of the world are dealing, and that is to play the cards of the victim.
Mayor Blackwell, how much of this do you lay at the feet of President Barack Obama?
Well, look, I think you go city after city after city, whether you're talking about Chicago, Milwaukee, or Detroit, and these are cities that have been governed for decades now by Democrat leaders who have embraced failed liberal urban policies that the president is retreading. And one of the things that we know is that there is high unemployment, something like 32% among young people in Milwaukee. And that's coming at a time when we see more and more people falling out of the workplace across the country. We have anemic economic growth, and as Ronald Reagan said, one of the best social programs ever invented was a job and an individual who was willing to work hard to move ahead. So this president has failed the people of these cities by embracing the failed policies of the past and trying to whip up this notion that every jobless person, every person who commits a crime, is committing the crime because of some, you know, evil Republican action.
Well, speaking of Republicans, Mr. Mayor, we've got just 30 seconds left. How would you contrast, looking to the election season that we're in, how would you contrast Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton on these underlying issues? Again, real fast.
Well, he's ready to get the country moving again by, you know, taking some of the shackles off of capital, creating jobs, and putting people to work. That's how you turn this around. And then we have to have responsibilities to make sure that we have moms and dads in the home taking responsibility for their children.
We've been talking with Ken Blackwell, a former all sorts of stuff, making him a world-class expert on this. Mr. Mayor Blackwell, we're so grateful to have you. God bless. Folks, we'll be back with your calls after the break.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary, and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stopped along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or visit the website twholyland.com.
It's our first liberty, freedom of religion. An easy way to show your support for the First Amendment is with the Freedom of Religion buttons from the American Family Association. They're conversation starters and demonstrate what it means to have religious freedom in America. They're also a way to bring attention to how the First Amendment is under assault today. It needs support now more than ever. Get a pack of Freedom of Religion buttons at afastore.net.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. You know, the charitable gift annuity concept is more important today than probably ever. It is something that you have heard me talk about for many, many years. And right now, for now, the tax code is still allowing charitable organizations to establish a charitable gift annuity so that you can be guaranteed permanent income for the rest of your life. Don't waste any time. So many of you have IRAs, 401k money. Peel off a piece of that. Establish your charitable gift annuity so that you have a portion of permanent income that you know is never going to change for the rest of your life. Would you do it today? Call AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543. Extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. Extension 345.
And we're back, my fellow Americans, taking us to the top of the hour and the close of the show here, opening up the phone lines for you at 866-372-7234. We're hitting on the issues of illegal immigration, the voting process, Donald Trump, foreign policy, law and order, and the chaos that we're seeing as Milwaukee burns along with other wonderful cities across this land of ours, and the decision facing the American people on November 8th. And we want you to weigh in on that at 866-372-7234. As the phone lines are lighting up here, I also want to add that if you're liking the kind of stuff that you're hearing today, you need to make sure that you check out a whole host of world-class experts speaking about all the issues you care about. The Values Voter Summit will be held here in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, September 9 through 11 of this year, this election year of 2016, world-class experts on social issues, economic issues, national security issues, and your humble guest host will be among those speakers. Make sure you come and check us out, valuesvoterssummit.org. You can also go to frc.org or tonyperkins.com for information and to register, or call 877-372-2808. That's 877-372-2808. And we look forward to seeing you at VVS this year, one of the most consequential elections in this nation's history. Turning now to your callers, starting with a gentleman who's been on hold for a while as we were talking with Mayor Blackwell, Joseph from Kentucky. Thanks for holding. You are on Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, thanks you for know, hanging on.
Some of these courts have ruled against voter ID, which is pure nonsense. And the left will use the laws to promote lawlessness. If we have to, when you enter a building to vote, show the ID to enter the building instead of to vote. I mean, it's just a security issue right there. You got to know who's entering the building. And Hillary Clinton...
Now, before you move on to Hillary, just quickly, now, Joseph, what people will say is, yes, but you do not have a constitutional right to enter a building, but you do have a constitutional right to vote. And that's why they say they're objecting to someone having to show an ID before they can do it. What's your response to that?
Well, I have to show my ID whenever I go into a federal building. I don't have to go into the federal building. But I'll get penalized if I don't to take care of business. I mean, you've got to go into that. You go into that building, show your ID. I mean, if you get on an airplane, just like anything else. I mean, you
got to
show your ID.
And I think how I would respond to that, Joseph, is first of all, they would say, you know, again, you don't have a right to go into the federal building. You don't have a right to build to board an airplane, but you do have a right to cast a ballot. I think the effective way to come back on that, and this is actually a point that I explore in plenty of pages in that Yale Law and Policy Review piece that I spoke about called The Other Voting Right, is that you also don't have a duty to get on an airplane, and you don't have a duty to enter a federal building. But you do have a duty to vote, and you also have a constitutional right for no one else to be able to dilute your vote with illegal activity. And these sorts of common sense measures is what protects the vote for all lawful citizens. Now, go on, because I know you were holding for a long time. Give us a quick point on Hillary as we close out here.
Okay. Well, if, for instance, Hillary has stated several times that she believes that the Bill of Rights are subject to regulation. She said that on ABC. She said it on Fox. That's scary. If she has the audacity to take the paintings off the White House wall and try to stash them and take them out off with them, there's no telling what she'd do. I mean, as Secretary of State, she only allowed 20% of our uranium to be sold to the Russians. What would she do as president?
I hear what you're saying, Joseph, and I certainly don't trust her with regards to foreign policy or with the Bill of Rights. Now, people are going to be shocked. I'm going to say something that sounds like I'm siding with her for about 5 seconds, and then I'm going to finish my sentence, and that will dispel that fear. It is none of the provisions of the Bill of Rights are absolute. The right to free speech does not include the right to falsely shout fire in a crowded theater. It does not include the right to lie under oath, to impersonate a police officer, to get someone to sign a fraudulent contract. All of those are forms of speech. None of those are legally protected. The issue is, of course, when she's talking about this, she's speaking specifically about the Second Amendment. And she's talking about reasonable regulations on the right to keep and bear arms. As to what she calls reasonable regulations, she's made it clear in previous years that she says the Heller decision was wrongly decided and should be overruled. The one sentence summary on that for everyone is that in Heller, all the Supreme Court said was that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right held by private citizens, not at all connected to public militia service, and that as such, the government could not, while it could potentially regulate gun ownership, could not categorically ban a law-abiding citizen from having a handgun in his own home for personal protection. That's the decision she wants overruled. That's the outcome she wants reversed. Any view of regulation that would say that a law law-abiding adult man can't even, or woman, can't even have a handgun in their own personal home for self-defense. Folks, that is not regulating the Second Amendment. That is abolishing the Second Amendment. And Donald Trump is dead right to call her out on it. Joseph, thanks so much for calling. Turning now to Charles from Missouri. Charles, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you for what you do. I appreciate you and Tony.
Thank you, Charles.
I agree with Donald Trump, the way he's talking about going about protecting our borders and identifying terrorists. He's actually using profiling, not neglecting and trying to dumb America down, saying we shouldn't profile, we shouldn't have hate speech because we have someone going against us. And why is it that the terrorists always quote the Quran are declared jihad by saying God is greatest, by saying Allah Akbar? And I don't understand why it's stupid not to protect our borders or create a wall on our borders. China did it to protect yourself from the Mongolians. I don't agree with everything that Trump says, but during the Republican Party thing, he actually showed towards the end of his speech that he would actually respect the rights of the Republicans, of what we believe in, our Christian values and stuff like that. So I would vote for Trump, and I couldn't trust Hillary because of Benghazi and her carelessness on her, I can't think of what they call it,
Well, I'll tell you, Charles, I'll quote one of the great worship songs out there saying, and all the people said amen. I think I'm with you on each of those points. And yes, with Mr. Trump and immigration policy, absolutely right. The border needs to be secured. And what ticks me off as a constitutional lawyer about this is that people are, oh, no, you can't profile. You can't profile. Well, excuse me. The Fourth Amendment says you must be free of unreasonable searches and seizures, and goes on to say that it's unreasonable if you have a reasonable expectation of privacy. Now, the Supreme Court has explicitly held repeatedly, no one has a reasonable expectation of privacy when they're crossing the American border. The American government has every authority to investigate you as thoroughly as they believe is in the national interest for anyone seeking to enter this country by foot over the border, by port, or by train. And any vetting procedure that investigates a potential immigrant is completely consistent with the Fourth Amendment, which is why the Constitution places complete control over immigration in Congress and the president. Charles, thanks for calling. Turning to Joe from Texas. Joe, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Joe. What can I do for you?
I'm calling concerned Obama. He's not willing to call terrorists terrorists. He uses code words to help the terrorists, and he is a Muslim. I knew this back when he first got elected in 2008. The media tried to block that with Reverend Wright and everything else. But this president has aided and abetted our enemy. And then also with the $400 million that got transferred over to them, he had to do it with somehow with Congress approval, or he sidestepped it. He's a lawbreaker.
Well, there's no question he broke the law. I think I'm not with you, Joe, on calling Obama a Muslim. I think he's an adherent to a liberal, bastardized, perverted form of Christianity taught as an abomination from the Church of Dr. Jeremiah Wright, fusing black nationalism with liberation theology, which is just absolutely irreconcilable and contradicts the gospel of Jesus Christ as set forth in the Holy Bible. But setting that aside, I agree that the president broke the law in an illegal $400 million ransom payment to Iran for our service members, and that, yeah, he will not call it out by name. radical Islamic terrorism. What I want to know and what I think the American people want to know more about is exactly what sort of details regarding this Iranian deal, not the recent swap, but when this deal was first formulated that he says was in play when our service members were illegally apprehended by the Iranians. I want to know exactly what Hillary Clinton knew and when she knew it in that shameful, disgraceful treatment of our service members. Thanks, Joe, for the call. Turning now to Don from Nebraska. You're on Washington Watch.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Don.
How are you?
Don, I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Hey, I was just listening to the mayor making a comment about the unrest, you know, in Milwaukee and stuff. And I guess my thought on it was that liberals are voting for Hillary to take their own jobs away because she's letting all the illegal immigrants in and everybody else. You got another 10,000 Syrians coming in with nothing against them, but that's 10,000 more jobs that legal Americans aren't going to have.
I think you're raising a good point, Don. And folks, I mean, we've been getting a lot of I'm going to respond to Don here, but first, we'll talk with all of you a second and just say we've been hearing a lot of opinions today. We want to know if you agree or disagree. If you think we're off base, you let us know at 866-372-7234. I always want to invite people who disagree with what they're hearing. This is your chance to tell me and a million other people why you think we're wrong. At 866-372-7234. But Don, with what you're talking about, I think in this is one of the big drivers, it seems to me, on Donald Trump's immigration policy. And that is we want to have an immigration policy that is in the national interest. And two regards in which the policy supported not just by Obama, but by Hillary Clinton, where it is grossly against the national interest, is first of all, when we're bringing in people that we are not fully vetting, for all we know, we are bringing in someone who could be dangerous to this country. We know our intelligence services have made clear, and there's been public testimony, that terrorist groups are trying to position some of their operatives to look like refugees and try to infiltrate the United States doing it. I think bringing in, you know, 8,000 Syrians, another 10,000 on the way, I think the idea that they're not succeeding in that when our government is admitting that they cannot vet these people fully as they're coming in. I think that is a national security threat, and that's why we need to fundamentally revisit that policy. But as you pointed out, Don, this is also an economic issue, and that is we need an immigration policy that protects our nation's interests, and that may involve bringing in all sorts of foreign people. But generically speaking, for someone who doesn't have a specific role for us to have play here, that means if you're just bringing in one more person who needs to have a job, that may make it harder for an American to get a job. Thanks, Don, for the call. Appreciate it. Turning now to Rosie from Texas. Rosie, you're on Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. How are you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You know, I was just talking to Paul about it. I'm just a simple person, but nobody can be blind to everything they do, and everything they do is filth. That's all they do. But I'm going to tell you something. Mr. Donald Trump, they're against him. They're going everywhere they can. But he's only talking just like all the Americans want to talk. All the Americans who want to say exactly what he's saying, you know? Maybe not as rudely, but yes, we have to. There's one thing that I remember. He just said that Obama, I know, he was the one that created ISIS and all that. I'll tell you one thing. If you go back in a few years, remember when they took one of those soldiers and they put him out there, that he went over and he rescued him and all this and that and got his parents and he looked like an angel, Obama. But actually, he let go five of the most dangerous people from incarcerated.
I am so glad you're raising that point, Rosie, and yet we have seen a pattern from this president. And again, Hillary Clinton is promising more of the same. That's right, we got one of our people in exchange for five Taliban commanders. terrorist commanders, at least one of which we know is now running military operations against our citizens. Just absolutely incredible. And that we've seen that now with these Iranian payments as well. Rosie, thanks so much. I appreciate that. Folks, all my callers and guests, thanks for calling. We'll be back tomorrow. God bless on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.